Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
A choice right now, between fear and love. Sister Ron.
Out of the dark night of ignorance and into the shining light of truth.
Expounding reality.
A population of citizens capable of critical thinking.
We don't see things as they are, we see them as we are.
There's a level of reality where everything dissolves into an ocean of energy.
We empower our experience by insisting on our authenticity.
That's very profound.
Very.
Expanding reality.
Don Lester, welcome, welcome, welcome. I am so grateful that we are here and hanging out together. You have written an incredibly cool book, co-authored, we've written two, but this one here that I have on me is What Really Makes You Ill. And guys, this is going to be linked down in the show description, and I want to talk to you about this as well, because this thinking man on here is sort of a Mandela effect, isn't it? Have you heard about that?
Oh, yes.
Okay,
oh,
we'll
yes,
talk about
definitely.
It.
Okay. Oh, absolutely. Yes, I know all about that.
Love this. Now, yeah, your connection from Mark Gober. He met you in Austin hanging out, and you guys were down there for the eclipse time. We knew like 40 people down there. And to be honest, darling, we just didn't want to deal with the traffic and shit. We could see it from our backyard. So the wife and I chose to do that instead. But you were down there, and Mark Gober took the time to say, Don and you have got to connect. We then had a conversation. You have since joined us for a couple of these hangouts that we've had. You were with us the other night for Emily Trinkus. My God, that was so cool. She pulled up everybody's chart. We're doing astrological deep dives over there, and it's just been awesome. So you are already, you know, deep in our hearts here, and I'm so grateful to introduce you to the Expanding Reality Universe here. So welcome, first of all. And if you don't mind, again, all the ways to find you, your Substack, your Facebook, your Instagram, as well as any other way that you want to be found will be located down there. I'm also going to shout out Mark Gober just for the contact here. And just wanted to invite you, if you don't mind, darling, to introduce yourself in your own words for the audience here.
Hi. Well, I'm just so delighted, thrilled, excited to be here and part of your community. I just feel so honored to be included so quickly. It's just you know when you feel at home with your people, it's wonderful. So I'm really honored to be here. I'm Dawn Lester, as you said, Brandon. I co-authored the What Really Makes You Ill, Why Everything You Thought You Knew About Disease Is Wrong. It was published in 2019, took about 10 years of research. It wasn't our first book, because we actually started looking into the nature of reality and published a book by that name in 2010. So it was part of that understanding that led us to kind of go, well, how does health work, you know, if all these things are out there, you know, these horrible, nasty, dangerous germs are out there to attack us and make us ill. At the time, we did write a very short book with the title Why Germs Don't Make You Ill and Drugs Can't Cure You. That was also in 2010. It was just a brief overview, but we knew we then had to go into a deep dive, which we did. I didn't know it's going to take us quite so long, but that's because we kept asking the questions, but what about, and realised we also had to cover the whole background. So it's not just about health as such. It's also the background, the history of some of this stuff, just to put everything in context so people had a complete overview of what's wrong with the medical system, why it doesn't work, because it doesn't work, and really to help people get an idea of what they can do about it. So even though there's a lot of stuff in there that shows what's wrong, it's not to make people scared. So it's not a fear porn book. It's to help people have the information they need to actually make informed decisions. Because, you know, we're told, oh, we make an informed decision. Well, not if you're not getting all, or most of the information you need. So you're only getting one side. So we're just saying, well, okay, here's the other side. Here's what you need to have a look at. And, you know, I mean, it's not comprehensive because, some, you know, there's always somebody that says, oh, but what about this, that, and the other disease? You go, okay, there are thousands of them. So it's like, we covered the most, and not just infectious ones, but chronic illnesses, and just gathered a lot of information to show that what they're basically, what the medical system is saying, the medical establishment system is just, it's not the way health is. It's not the way the body works. So that's the kind of starting point. But at the same time, there's also the bigger aspect, the consciousness aspect as to who we are, what we are, and what control we have over our bodies. So that is part of it, but that part of it isn't in that book. Otherwise, it would have been twice as big, or, you know, you know, kind of, it would have been War and Peace, you know, 2-volume set or something. But no, it's the consciousness piece is huge. So I don't know if that's where you wanted me to go with the kind of introduction, yeah. But that's where I am. But I'm bringing my own kind of experiences into things, and then looking at everything in a different way, and then being able to share that with people to help them understand what we are, who we are, what we're doing, and what we can do, which is the key point. We can do a lot more than we're told.
And this is a big part of the conversation I'd like to have with you this evening is, of course, you know, what's going on. There's a lot of fear being used to disempower. And I'm sure that the more that you dove into what was happening with the healthcare system, with everything, then did it make you a little paranoid, as if there was some sort of contrived ideal behind it to keep people unhealthy?
It's pretty obvious that it's, there are different layers. I mean, most of the people who work in the system are trained in the system, and so they just follow whatever it is they were trained in, so they just carry on doing it, believing that that's correct. I think there's something, you know, there are layers higher up where they know that it's not necessarily about people being healthy, it's just about keeping customers, which is one level. It's people being controlled, which is another level, because if you keeping people in fear, because that's also stops people from thinking, and they just defer to someone else. It's like, I don't know, it's all confusing, I can't think for myself. And, well, the man in the white coat says this, you know, doctors, whatever, these experts. So, and it's just the indoctrination, but it's not sort of obvious. These things are insidious steps that have been taken over a long period of time. So, you know, it's just, boiling frog analogy, where you just, or just instead of drip, it's just a drip, drip here, and you don't notice it as you're going along. But when you stop and look back, say 20 years, you think there's a lot that's changed. It's like, oh, yeah,
it's a gut punch.
But you don't notice it.
Yeah, because then you look around and you're like, hang on, but all of these things correspond together to sort of entourage effect, make us unhealthy. But there's this whole system also that is unhealthy inherently in the current medical system we have, this allopathic drive to just get these petroleum products into your body, or these vaccines and these questionable materials and preservatives and all kinds of things. And it's just, again, it does feel like a commercial business in a sense, that it's just a capitalism thing, that we can't do the 100-year light bulb because then you would need to make more light bulbs. But we've got to keep people unhealthy so that there's a business to heal people, which is not really in the business of health. It's in the business of treating symptoms that were inherently probably caused by some form that they're involved in, or disregarded by them in some way deliberately to continue to treat the air quotes dis-ease, which is another thing I want to talk to you about. So dis-ease, what is that all about?
Well, first of all, I agree totally with what you're saying. You know, the idea is the model that is, you know, keeps people as customers, and the petroleum products, because, you know, the Rockefellers came into it at the beginning of the 20th century. It was, you know, if you look further back, there were these organisations, and, you know, starting in England, the sort of surgeons and physicians, you know, they had their own organisations, and they were trying to kind of take control through just getting people to qualify and only be qualified, and only those who are qualified there are the true physicians, if you like. But this isn't about healing or understanding healing, and it is so. It has a longer history in England. It's just obviously transferred over. All you know, these. I mean, it's not. You know, we know these people are all interconnected, and so you know, it wasn't like, oh, it was transferred from England over to the States. They probably knew what they were doing and think, oh, let's get this into the States because, you know, there's a lot more people over there. So it's a bigger, you know, they can make even more money. So the whole model of disease is that there are the standard model is that there are these different conditions that we get or catch or give to each other or, you know, it's something that just happens. And, you know, there's little you can do about it. So it's just, oh, well, tough luck. It's either your, you know, germs, genes, or just bad luck or something like that. It's just these are separate entities that we get where once you start kind of looking into actually how the body works and what really happens, you find that that's just complete rubbish. It has no basis, but obviously it's a useful model, but it has no basis because it just denies how the body really works. And of course, they don't want us to know that the body is this amazing self-regulating organism. You know, the body can look after itself, and they don't want us to know that because then they lose control, of course. You know, and they just go, oh, actually, we don't need you. Thank you very much. I'll just go and do this and look after my body because... You know, it's not a machine of bits and pieces that they can just, oh, well, just hack this off and, you know, that bit, oh, well, it doesn't matter, you don't need that bit. Well, you do. You know, you've got all your parts for a reason. You know, that's how the body works. It can cope with a fair amount of abuse. Not necessarily, I'm saying, you know, people don't necessarily deliberately abuse their own bodies, but it can cope with a certain amount of you know, sort of toxins and different, all sorts of different things. It's just that, you know, that there's then becomes a level where it starts to kind of say, oh no. So like toxins, for example, they get sort of overloaded and they're not flushed out through the usual processes. Then you'll start getting symptoms because that's just the body kind of clearing some rubbish out. You know, it's just kind of like, well, we don't need this crap, you know, just trying to get it out. And so that's where, I mean, things like vomiting and diarrhea, you know, that's pretty obvious. If you eat something, your body says, don't like that, it's going to try and get rid of it. You know, I mean, that's just logic, isn't it? It's just such common sense. Once you stop looking at this, you think, yeah, of course it's right. You know, how could you have thought that, you know, your body was that stupid? But, it isn't. So, sorry, excuse me. So there aren't any diseases at all. So we can just throw away that whole list of labels because they're just labels and they're used to scare people. And unfortunately, that's one of the hard things for people to kind of just get rid of the idea that there are labels, you know, that these things exist, you know, because they say, what about this, this and this? But when we can get out of that mindset of these different labels, you kind of realize that there are only sets of symptoms. And so that's what your body is dealing with. So your body's processing something and you've got symptoms. I mean, what gives the body kind of a reason to actually produce these symptoms? You know, we can sort of go into there's a few different, and it's always different combinations for different people. So once you can get out of that idea that there are these things called diseases, you just go, well, throw that out and say, right, okay, what's my body doing? Okay, I've got my head hurts. So, yeah, so again, that's the thing of I've got or I have. It's, you know, possessing, so we get that. They get that out of the way as well. It says, okay, my head's hurting. You know, it might be your body just saying, well, go and have a rest or, you know, get away from the screen or something, just, you know, because it's your body giving you some information. So these are just different symptoms that are arising in the body for different reasons. And it's learning to just be okay with that, to also recognize that you can kind of question your body and say, okay, what's going on? You know, so again, start trusting intuition as opposed to this, you know, this other system that we've been indoctrinated into, and start listening and think, what did I do? What did I eat? What happened that might be giving rise to this symptom? You know, start listening sort of intuitively. And as I say, you might get some of the answers. But that step of these labels, I mean, that's just, that's one of the big steps, I think, the biggest, you know, because people will give these sets of symptoms. And one of the things that was so astounding, really, that going through all these different, not just papers, but all these different websites, you know, like the WHO, CDC and the NHS, where once you start looking at the information they're providing about these so-called conditions, you read that, you know, we don't quite know the exact cause. We're not totally sure. And again, in study papers as well, I read so many where, you know, we're not entirely sure of the exact cause, you know, but this, so it's most research obviously is to produce some kind of treatment. I mean, I won't say medicine because it's not, but it's some kind of treatment that will affect something that they're doing in the laboratory, which has nothing to do with the body. So they're just trying to produce some kind of product. And they'll say, we don't know quite what causes this, but this seems to do something. And quite often at the end, they say, but more research is required. So, of course, they're just keeping themselves occupied, you know, making sure that they've got a job going forward. And it's like, oh, we need to carry on researching, because that's a lot of the problem with getting funding to do research. And most funding goes into research that's backed by pharmaceutical companies or they're connected to pharmaceutical companies, because obviously they want to carry on with their products. So it's all so intricately interconnected, you know, and that's why it's tough to get in any kind of research that looks into anything other than that's the way that system works. So they're still stuck with these labels of diseases. And, you know, at the beginning they'll say, oh, this disease is caused by X, Y, Z. But when you look into it, they say, not necessarily, because, you know, once you start digging into the paper, you go, well, we don't exactly know the mechanism of action. We don't quite know what this is. And it's all conditional language of probably. And it's just incredible once you look at it. And they're the kinds of things that are in the book to just show people that, you know, there are contradictions all the way through this system and their literature.
You know, you nailed it with this, and I'm going to shout out as well Mark Gober's book, An End to Upside Down Medicine. Guys, I'm going to go ahead and link him again down there as a shout out for connecting us, so thank you so much. Something he points out in there, as you just spoke about and is in your book as well, is the innate ridiculousness about how they have to set up conditions for these in laboratory conditions for diseases to be transmitted or affect anything at all. And this gets into to different topics of conversation. But what's fascinating is, again, the laboratory conditions. They will say, well, we took this mess of things from a squid ass and the left foot of a shrew that's been endangered forever. And then this type of poisonous plant, we mixed it together and injected it directly into the brain of this rabbit while we strapped it down and electrocuted it. And then for some reason, it felt bad and died. It's like, well, shit, man, maybe any one of those conditions. So the conditions themselves in which they're able to get these reactions to therefore skew their papers, which, again, they don't interview everybody. They don't bring forth all of the results. They bring forth the results that lean towards their motives. Because like you said, the funding is all with a motive. It needs an outcome leaned in a certain direction. It's not there for the posterity of science to find out what's going on. It wants to know how to make people just on the brink of death and need them so much to where they can counterbalance these symptoms with reactions in the body. And something you said about it as well is disease itself is inherently not real. But what's fascinating about it is it's more real than anything. You know, it's sort of this idea that time's not real, but timing is everything, right? It's because disease is in the mind, it's a mental disease at that point, which means that people will release cytokines in their body because they read something feeling like that's what's occurring in them. Their body will mimic that because that's how powerful you are. And then they'll have a pill for it or a treatment for something that's really just something that happens. Something that my nephew and I talked about whenever he came out here to work on the ranch. He's a younger guy at the time, and he did great. One of the things we talked about is the difference between discomfort and pain. And discomfort usually is an indicator that you're challenging yourself, that you're growing in a certain way. Pain is an indication that something's wrong and needs your attention, which is very different, right? So when we'd be working out here in the ranch, you'd be like, oh, I'm in pain, I'm in pain. You're not. You're uncomfortable because these muscles haven't been used yet, right? Once we get through that, you're able to build up and be stronger, right? But what's interesting about this as well is this slight discomfort is met with an immediate pill from the pharmaceutical company, where maybe you were just in a growing cycle. Maybe you just got a ton of sun and your body's doing great with its vitamin D right now, and you're just feeling a lot healthier and different. And you don't know how to regulate that, so you'll take a pill to sort of balance yourself down vibrationally. So it's interesting as well that the freeness that comes with you, with the real understanding that something out here is not out for your health. It's not a health system. It's a to create cures to treat symptoms type of a system. And you even had a wonderful quote in your book by Herbert Shelton: this full recovery cannot be expected so long as the cause remains. And what that, you know, spoke to is that we're not getting to the core causes of these things, which is where the dis-ease lies, which is more of probably just a mental psychosomatic thing at its core. But really, there are many underlying systems of growth here that you can take part in to heal yourself that have nothing to do with petroleum pills or products or anything. There are sonic, remember Isaac last night in our conversation with Emily, talked about his knee was killing him for a long time. He went, did some sonic therapy, no problems whatsoever. So there are so many other alternative methods for this. Now, the real question, and if you have anything to say on that, I'll pause for that. But the real question then would be, you know, are there other modes of healing that you've looked into, I'm sure, that you could recommend over any of the petroleum product type things that we're, you know, pulling away from?
I will come back to that. I will add to what you were saying, just as a sort of response lightly. I mean, you're absolutely right. There is dis-ease, which is not when I'm saying, oh, there are no diseases. What I mean is in that context, but at dis-ease. And that dis-ease is not always physical, that there is so much more that's going on. And it's kind of known in the pharmaceutical industry, because obviously they work with placebo pills. They do know about the placebo effect and its opposite, the nocebo effect, because they can actually have people who take, placebo pills are just inert, they're sugar pills or something. There's nothing in them that is supposed to actually do anything to a person's kind of symptoms. It's not supposed to manage the symptoms. And yet people have been reported, I mean, it's, you know, there's tons and tons of evidence that people have reported feeling better having taken these placebos. And some people have actually reported having expected side effects of something. I mean, certainly with the chemotherapy trial, and, you know, people were producing, because they knew they were in a chemotherapy trial. I mean, so to a certain extent, it wasn't totally blinded, but they were producing side effects, you know, because people know what some of the side effects. And so vomiting and hair loss were two of the things that people were actually reporting as having experienced. And they were on the placebo. They were in this placebo, the control group. So there's no reason for them to have produced for their body to produce those effects. So the mind, and I'm not going to do this because it's not actually in there either, you know, our thoughts, beliefs, ideas, fears, all of that play a huge role. And those who know that play on it. And, you know, just look at what's happened in the last 4 years. And they've just used fear. And so many people have looked at what's going on, you know, this whole COVID nonsense. I mean, and it is complete and utter nonsense. There was no disease, whatever they're trying to make out. What they were doing was pumping out this fear all the time and putting that out daily, telling people what the symptoms are, the symptoms. And so people are reading them, all the symptoms. And some people, I'm not saying I know the proportion, but it's because of we know, because of the way the body, the mind works, we know that. We know there will be a number of people, you know, percentage, who would have just manifested those symptoms because they were expecting it, just the fear porn the whole time, just pushing and pushing at it. So yes, that's a huge aspect of this whole health thing, And at the same time, because we know our, you know, our own thoughts and ideas, whatever, are so powerful, we can say, right, okay, well, we can take back control and we can actually do something about it. So that's how we can take back control over our own health and do something to positively affect it, because it's only the body that heals itself. So anything that we do will support the body's healing processes. So we can, what we do either supports the body or gets in the way. And all the whole medical system essentially gets in the way. And I'm not talking about surgeries. This is just the so-called medicine part of it. So yeah, the
Oh, the daily stuff, just your everyday coughs, colds, bumps, bruises, yeah, little sores, little heres and theres, just, you know, and it takes away your independence to heal yourself and to be really, you know, sort of aware of your capabilities of what you have around you, and then ignore nature all around you as well. You know, we'll go through the plants app all around our property and be like, holy shit, we have all these fascinating plants all around. We even looked at one that the dog kept eating because we wanted to make sure it wasn't poisonous or anything like that, which I don't know why an animal would run to a poisonous thing and eat it anyway. We have goats and stuff out here that will only eat on the junipers if they need to be dewormed, because it's a natural dewormer. They kind of know inherently what to go after. So we started noticing this purple flower out here. It turns out it was a common stork's bill, which is astringent, which helps for, and it's an anti-inflammatory. So she was nibbling on something. Now, this is a very active dog that runs constantly. And so she would take breaks, nibble on this little plant, and run off, totally harmless to dogs. She knew she needed it out of the field of wildflowers that we have grown. She went to that one, knew what it was, and ate it. And so you can see this with nature as well, is that it only gets something when it needs it. You know, it's like bears aren't killing a bunch of things and then stocking them up unless it's winter, right? They're not doing this in spring when winter's, you know, when food's plentiful. You're just sort of coming across things as you're going through it, but also you're intuitively guided to do this as long as you really pay attention to yourself. You know, a lot of the times when it was like, hey, here's a pill option, I wouldn't want it. Inherently, I'm just not a pill kind of person. I'm just not. I'll take some water. I'll take a walk outside. I feel a lot better. And that's sort of my metric, is that those pills didn't make me feel better. I got a vasectomy, did not even take the pain pills because I just can't stand the way that they make me feel, this nauseous, the rooms, like somebody stopped the world, I want to get off. My whole body rejects it like crazy. So I'm not drawn to those anyhow. But it's fascinating, again, when you look at nature, that it's not out there, you know, consuming Tylenol and shit for its headaches. It'll go after a little plant here and there and then move on, you know? It's just really interesting. We can learn a lot from nature is all I'm saying, instead of these idiots in lab coats.
Exactly. And what you said about what's growing locally, the more, I mean, I'm still learning, you know, even though the sort of book, I mean, there's loads more to learn and there's loads more we still don't know about how the body works, what we can do to help support it. Using, looking actually where you live, you will find your remedies or the shall we say the plants that will help support your body, heal yourself in your own environment. And this is the other thing, you kind of, we're trained to look at these, whatever it is, medicines, you know, true medicines, whatever, from elsewhere and outside. And I mean, this is something that Amanda Vollmer talks about a lot, is, you know, looking in your own environment, because that's where you will find the things that will help you, your body, heal itself.
Yeah. When you travel, go get your local honey, take a scoopful of the localest honey you can get. And that will help you fight off all of the allergies in the area for your stay. If you're going on a trip or something, that's the first thing we did when we got to Australia. We got a little thing of honey and just took a big old scoop of it. It was great.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you were asking me about, I mean, even though I can say whatever I want, I can't give people advice because it's not something I've studied and I'm not in a position to. I just don't have the knowledge. At the same time, I know there are certain things that we can do, and that's to, you know, talk about water, to have clean water where possible, you know, so not out the tap. I mean, I'm sure, you know, your audience knows all of that. So one of the things that I've discovered in recently is to do with tissue sorts or cell sorts, as some people know them. They are not, they're called homeopathic, but they're not actually homeopathic remedies. They are minerals. I think there are 27 of them, but there are 12 pretty basic ones. And that also, ties in with the whole conversation we were having with Emily, because there are 12 cell sorts, and there's one that applies for each of the signs of the zodiac. So because I'm Pisces, the one for me is ferrum phosphate. So the idea is that depending on when you were born as to what cell sort you probably need most of, but also because you're, you know, the 9 month gestation period, there'll be three that you don't get from your mother. So the three months after. But again, depending on whether you're sort of, you know, born at the cusp or in the middle or whatever it is. So that's something that other people go into, particularly Dr. Bearlander of the Alpha Vedic podcast, Alpha Vedic community. He talks about that a lot. He explains that and how that works, and the fact that they are, because of just, you know, the mess that's being sprayed on us and the way, you know, on the crops in the atmosphere and everything else, it's one of the things to do to just help support your body, because even though you may have organic food, you may grow it your own, growing your own food is great, and you may grow it organically and look after it and not put any, you know, any sort of toxins or any crack on it, whatever, that there's stuff in the atmosphere and that you can't necessarily control, and there are the depletion of the soils and everything because of all things that may have gone on before you even bought the land, so you don't know. So again, it's to help support the body. So that's one of the things that I've, so again, it's not a recommendation, but that's one of the things that I've been adding to my sort of daily routine.
So just to be clear, because I'm fascinated by this. So are there cycles that happen within the human body that every month or for 12 cycles, you get a release of this, or you need more of that particular mineral? Is this what you're saying? Or do you take all 12 daily, which help you? I just want to be clear on it because it sounds fascinating.
Right, I take all 12 because I'm Pisces, so I was born in March. So it would seem that my body is more; it requires more of that particular one that applies to me.
So depending on your sun sign,
based on your sun sign, yes.
And this is an ancient sort of understanding to where those 12 correspond with these sun signs.
Yes. There's a fascinating book called "The Zodiac and the Sorts of Salvation" by Dr. George Carey, Carey.
Just sounds fascinating.
It is fascinating. And again, that's, you know, it just ties all these different things in with showing how everything is so interconnected. You know, we are so interconnected to nature, to the whole realm, whatever we want to make of it. You know, we're not disconnected. And to think that we are is such a mistake. And that's where the medical system goes wrong, because they think, oh, well, you just, the human body is just a machine and they can just sort of fix it like they fix any machine. Sorry, excuse me.
That's okay. It's very subjective, like though. And it is based on astrology a lot, which is fascinating.
Yes. No, absolutely. It's based on astrology. And each sign, you know, each different mineral has a different affects a different part of your body. It's just, I wish I knew more, but it's, I know somebody who's been studying it for years and he still says he's learning more. So it is a fascinating topic. So again, with the whole astrology thing and how that ties into not just how we are in the world, but how our bodies work and yes.
It's so interesting. And So there's even an astrological sun sign. I'm just going to derail on this real quick because it's fascinating that Aries needs number 6, Caliphilus number 6. Taurus needs natural sulfur. I guess Gemini is a Kali Mer. These are sort of abbreviated, but wow. It's just interesting that to correlate it, because then, you know, it's one of the elements, right? I mean, now we're talking alchemy more than ever, because mercury, sulfur, and salt are, you know, but it didn't say which type of salt. And so now to think that it's a more delineateable salt based on you, that's very customizable. It's like, yeah, it's you know, mercury, sulfur, and salt, but it's your type of salt because you were born on this. And so therefore, I just find this very interesting to tie the physical minerals into the things happening in the stars, which they say are where all of this is born anyway, which is fascinating.
Yes, and that's something that Dr. Berlander goes into. I mean, he's an alchemist, so yes, he talks about all of that and the alchemy, very much into the work of Walter Russell. If you're aware of that. I mean, I'm right on the edge of the sort of beginning stages of, and this is what I mean about learning more since the book came out, because that's a grounding in what's wrong with the system. And then once you start taking back control and you start looking at what we can do, and then finding out what the body is, and then just, you know, from a physical, so-called physical perspective, and then the esoteric, you know, because I mean, it's all hidden from us, and go, well, okay, well, there's lots of information we start learning, and we recognize the interconnections, and it's fascinating, but it's also so empowering. It really is just amazing where you think, hey, you know, what can I do? And that's really the whole thing about learning what life is, and saying, hey, what can I do?
You know, love this. Yeah, well, because your approach focuses on, you know, and I'm just curious, I'd like to sort of talk to you about what you're going, where you're going next with this, but this is incredible. 740 pages, guys, over. And the source material is fascinating in here as well. And I had a couple of things I wanted to pull up in it before we cut out, but I wanted to just comment on that. So you went physical realm on this one. You went your physical body, physical health. Are you going to tackle the three bodies, your physical, mental, and spiritual or emotional body? Are you going to go for the different bodies and sort of tie them together, maybe astrologically, to where you just sort of go to supra consciousness, all those levels? Is that sort of what you're thinking on this, is tying it all in?
Not quite in the context of different bodies, more in the context of the kind of consciousness aspect of who we are. And again, I'm not sufficiently sort of read up on the, you know, the different bodies and whether they are different bodies as such, or whether they are, my perspective at the moment, and I'm still learning, so I'm looking into changing, you know, I'm open to changing it, if, you know, because just I'm still learning, as I say, looking at it from a perspective of consciousness, and everything we experience is, you know, experiences in consciousness and states of consciousness. So I at the moment, my language would suggest that, or my way of understanding, the way I language it, is to say they are different states of consciousness, and more expanded consciousness that you will have different experiences. So whether it's sort of in this realm or beyond, so like in the dream state, you know, when you're in the dreams, you know, you just, there are far fewer limitations on what we can do. You know, people do all sorts of interesting things that they can't necessarily do here. So the filters are off, because I mean, that's the way we operate here, they're filters. And so we function in a particular way. So it's sort of, you know, the time and space and all the, so we get the perception of time and space. Whereas in the dream state, the filters are looser, you know, they're not as tight. So we're sort of open to more. I don't know more. I don't know enough about these other bodies to say whether I'd take it. I wouldn't necessarily go from that perspective, but it is to open it up into looking at what we can know about consciousness and what we do with it, what we can do with it here.
Yeah.
And that also ties back to my perspective on the Mandela effect. I know it was head on. I know, yes. Now, interesting,
like
that
is right.
Yeah, it was. Absolutely. And the interesting thing is that image is taken from a photograph that my writing partner David Parker took when he actually saw that. He took a photograph, and then we used that. But I've been using that thinker image. You know, the there's a photograph of the one of the statues, and I don't know exactly where it is, but it's outside, so there's sort of greenery around it. And that was my profile picture for Facebook since 2008. So I know it was, a fist on head. You know, I know it. And even though I was always told I had a bad memory, it's like, no, my memory's not that bad.
But that's the thing. Maybe they planted a seed because they were going to alter the realm. So then the question is what the hell do you think the Mandela effect is? Because you have one, you printed, you've got it on your book here. You remember clearly as I do. I want to say that I'm from the dimension or whatever where my memory said that it was on the head. Made more sense. The head is where you think. So why would it, right? I don't know. That's how I associated it with it. So what do you think? Mandela effect.
Well, I can't take credit for this idea. I have listened to Brian Staveley, who talks about it an awful lot. He's one who's and I've listened to a lot of a number of his interviews, and I tend to agree that it is showing us how malleable this reality is, how flexible it is. It's not fixed in the way that we've been told, and things can change. And I think it's a very, from my perspective, I think it's a very positive piece of information, if you like, of how this realm works. So it's something that's positive, but I don't know all the different effects, but I don't think any of them are, if you like, kind of sinister or sort of malevolent, really. You know, there's nothing that I think is causing any. I know it's causing a lot of people to kind of, you know, discuss it and say, oh, no, it's BS, it's this, that, and the other. I do think it does feel that, you know, that could be a good explanation for why things just change. And that for me is just so, it's like, no, that changed. That definitely changed. And so I go, oh, okay. From my perspective, as I say, I see it as something that's really encouraging to say, no, this isn't fixed. And then again, with where I'm going is really to recognize the language we use and the words we use and how we can trap ourselves in limiting beliefs with our own language. So it's really to recognize that the more open we are with our thoughts and then with our language, and that's how we create our experiences in this realm, which is that aspect. So we can recognize that if we say, oh, you know, it's not possible, well, why isn't it possible? You know, so it's really to start looking at the language we use, because that will show us where our beliefs are. And then we can say, well, and to then look at your belief and say, well, actually, is it true? You know, is that correct? I mean, I know that's sort of drifting in a little bit into sort of Byron Katie, and it's like, you know, is it true at the same time? It's, you know, what is true? Because I mean, that's really where we are, just saying, okay, let's throw out all the what we've been told, because we know most of it's rubbish. And what is true? Let's have a look. What is true? What is real? What can we, and not from a perspective of, you know, oh, nothing's true, but it's from a, what can we do? And the less limiting your ideas and beliefs are, and the more open you are, you kind of, okay, let's see what is, let's see what happens. So let's see what we can actually, you know, so like talking about manifesting. So what can we actually manifest? What actions can we take here? And if you don't think you can take an action, you start looking at, well, why not? So it's really the inner work, and then putting what we discover actually out into the world.
Do you think this is sort of the game here? Because it does feel like this Matryoshka doll that you're constantly breaking untruths, you know, and so some of us may get to the point to where we don't know what is true here, or if the truth is even to be found, because it seems that if you keep digging far enough, you'll continually shatter those Matryoshka dolls down to something beyond what it presented itself to be. So do you think that that's sort of the point of this place, is just constantly go for, you know, hit these untruths down? Do you think that there is truth to be discovered here rather than just constantly pointing out untruth?
Oh, yes. And I suppose you kind of get into the the whole deep depth of what is truth or what is true, you know, what's the difference. So, I mean, yeah, there are, you can trap yourself in thinking, oh, what's truth? Because, you know, different people have different ideas, and then because they manifest something, it's true for them, and they think it's then the same for everybody else. So again, we, you know, that's where we have the individual but connected at the same time with this idea. And I think, yeah, absolutely, I agree that a lot of it is finding out what isn't true, and that's really what the point of the book is, to say, you know, most, well, yeah, everything you've been taught about disease is wrong. Shove it to one side. Right, okay, so what is the body? What is health? What can we do? And so we're still learning about that. But you have to get rid of what isn't true. And sometimes you don't always know what is true, because you don't know what's inside until you break away what isn't true. It's really liberating, though, because now we know we're not trapped by a lot of the stuff we're told and we're indoctrinated with, as, you know, as we grow up, you know, in these indoctrination camps they call school. So, you know, there's that's not to say that there's nothing valuable. I mean, you know, if you learn to read and write and manipulate, you know, work with numbers, but, you know, so much else just isn't the case. You know, there's, and that can be, that can be distressing when you realize that everything is sort of false. You know, you go through that and you do have some dark nights of the soul, and you think, well, what is the point? But once you get through that, you know, shedding what isn't true, and then you think, well, actually, what is true? And then you start opening up to what is possible and what you can actually do with these, you know, what experiences you can have. And, you know, I just know from what I've been doing that I'm finding out what is possible. And, you know, I still catch myself on certain thoughts and ideas, and you think, okay, so I'm learning to sit with those and just say, okay, you know, just to go through that process. And when you're saying, right, here and now, is that true for here and now? And you go, well, no. So it's, most of it is to do with our thoughts. So we just need, and I say need to, I mean, it's up to you, different people, but to then have some ways of catching yourself when you could be going off on a spiral of different sort of ideas. And is that going to serve you with what you want to do with your life? So again, it's what we want to do with our lives, what we actually want to create. So it allows us to become more creative, because the limitations have just been shattered. So I think it can be scary at some point, and for some people, but it's incredibly liberating once you start really sort of sitting with that and just going, oh, okay, what can I do? You know, it gets exciting.
Do you think that there are limitations that can't be surmounted, like gravity or something?
Well, once you start looking into gravity, you find that, you know, there are some big problems with that.
So, I mean, the law of densities. Do you think that you can overcome
Let's
that?
Yes. No, I'm not suggesting that it's okay for people to jump off a cliff and think that they can fly. No, that's not at all what I. But so no, definitely. I don't know what's possible. I mean, this realm does have a certain way of functioning, so it appears, you know, the sort of solid, and we interact, you know, we've got this technology and we can do these kinds of things. So there are, I'd say, I'm not sure if limits, yeah, maybe it's not a question of limits, maybe it's just a question of there's certain basic functions.
But aren't limits just perceptions? And aren't those basic functions just what we've mostly been told about what's going on, not necessarily what's true?
Well, in terms of what we experience here, I mean, that I don't think, you know, day and night, you know, sun coming up, whatever, however that works, it's, you know, seeing the sun, and then it goes away and it gets dark. I think that's probably a basic function of this realm. Those kinds of things, you know, with nature, I think a lot of natural things are the functions here. That's where I'm at the moment. I mean, if there are some other ideas, and you know, I know again, because I've been looking into things like out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences, and looking more into that to try and understand what's going on and see if I can kind of expand my understanding of consciousness through those particular phenomena, because they're just fascinating. So I've been looking more into that, because that shows that it's not us who are here in the body, as it were. You know, who we truly are is beyond the body. So we're having an experience in the body. At the same time, it's not to say that, because we get this idea, well, are we a spiritual being having a human experience, or a human being having a spiritual experience? And I actually got the book, The Art of Living, by, and I hope I don't butcher his name, but Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, the Buddhist, the Zen master. And he basically, his definition of science and spirituality are that they're both kind of fields of research and study, you know, that they're both ways of developing and understanding. And so this is quoting him. He says, spirituality is a path for us to generate happiness, understanding, and love, so we can live deeply each moment of our lives. So spirituality isn't something elsewhere. This experience as human beings is as much spiritual, as part of our spiritual being, spiritual experience. You know, this is as spiritual as experiences in other states of consciousness, and in other accessing other areas of consciousness. So it's not a kind of lower state of beings. It's, you know, it kind of functions in a certain way, but there's a lot more that we can do with this. So it is, I just thought that was pretty amazing. And so it's not about, you know, I'm just looking at this, a couple of quotes that he's saying about the being spiritual isn't about escaping this. And I've been thinking, and I'm still pondering my ideas on it, but something like an out-of-body experience is somebody who maybe wanting to escape here, and again, all the idea of that you're actually going out of your body is, well, you're out of your body now as much now as you are then. It's just a question of where I think that, like, it's a focus of attention. So I mean, you can close your eyes and go off into other places anyway. It's just, you know, with our eyes open, we're sort of more focused here. So you know, you can go off and have what's called a daydream, or, you know, night dream, or whatever. So you know, you can switch your focus, and the you is not the, you know, it's not Brandon, you going somewhere else. It's the consciousness that is you, that is focusing as Brandon now, and can kind of withdraw that focus or lighten that focus and sort of focus somewhere else. So I've not had an out-of-body, so it's just, you know, which it's like, oh, I'd quite like to have that. So you just go, okay, to just know, oh, that's what it feels like.
You and me both,
time.
Sister. Yeah. You and me
both.
Oh,
you've not? Oh, no. Okay, yeah. Oh, okay, because it's like, yeah, that would be cool to, you know, just to experience it. At the same time, I've had certain situations, and one of them was when I was, I was training, Reiki training, sort of learning how to do Reiki, and there was one point where I just was, I can't remember if my eyes closed or open, but I just had this kind of feeling of expansion So it's so difficult to put this stuff into words, isn't it? Because this concept, but this feeling of expansion, of just being huge. So not like my body was huge, but I, you know, whatever that I is, was, because that's, if you like, behind this. It felt like sort of behind this, but I didn't feel like I left my body, but I just had this just this feeling of expansion.
So interesting. Have you ever partaken into psychedelics?
No. Okay. I mean, no.
Okay.
Did try some stuff as a teenager, you know, kind of, and nothing really did anything for me, so I didn't really get too involved. But
gosh, it wasn't pretty transcendental.
No, I mean, I'm curious, you know, to see what experiences I'd have, you know, in that kind of situation. I'm open to ideas.
Yeah. And I'm just curious to see, I asked the question to see if you could compare the two, what you felt in your Reiki training of expansion to any type of psychedelic, because that's the kind of the closest that I've gotten with any of that stuff. I've done the breath work, done the things, and it just feels like that's the most out there that I've ever been, is when a psychedelic was involved.
Yes. I mean, because the psychedelics, those kinds of, from my understanding, again, because I've not experienced it, from my understanding, it loosens the filters. Yeah.
That's what I've heard as well. But it's interesting that it's always different, you know, that no two trips are the same, essentially, that you get sort of similar artifacts, but that they're really different. And if you are removing filters, are you removing more filters each time, therefore revealing a different realm, or the realm that you look at, does it change? You know, is it inherently inconsistent?
I don't know how many realms there are. I mean,
right?
How many states, you know, because it's not like, oh, you go to this one or whatever it is. It's just you expand and have different experiences in different ways. It's just part of the learning. I say learning, that's not the right word really, is it? It's part of the experiencing. Whatever word you want to give to the ultimate creator. I mean, I like either the divine, because I think that has power to it. That has an amazing feel. I also like all that is, because it's all encompassing. It's not like a separate something. Mm. So
then
I think
pick
like
and choose what it wants to be a part of. It's part of everything. That's all here to offer its gifts.
Yes. And all that is focusing in different ways to have the experience of the different experiences in this way of functioning, you know, this sort of five sense, well, some people say other senses, but I mean this, you know, the limitations of this sort of five senses in a particular way. And then when we take the filters, when the filters are taken off, there are different experiences, and all these experiences inform all that is about what's possible. Because if we're in an everlasting, an eternal now, because in time and space doesn't really exist, does it? So there's only ever the eternal now. And so it's the experiences are the way that all that is gets being beyond this form. It's like knows everything but has to create whatever it is to experience it. So it's, you know, all these different analogies of, you know, learning something, and it's not, you know, if you want to learn to, you know, you can read all the books about whatever it is you want to learn until you actually do it. So it's like, you know, knows everything, knows all the information, knows everything, and yet has to create all of us and we create our experiences. And that's where we're connected, through that kind of big consciousness, you know, the consciousness of all that is. And that's where we are all interconnected. I've been starting playing with different analogies always help. Mm-hmm. So I've been playing with it, because And I know it's something that Mark Gober uses, because he, again, refers to Bernardo Kastrup, and I've read one of his books as well, using the whirlpool analogy, and, you know, using the kind of body of, you know, the ocean. I think sometimes the kind of, because it's just a body of water, people say, but yeah, but I'm an individual. And so it's getting that being an individual and part of all that is at the same time. It's you know, kind of, how do we get our minds around that?
Sort of like the wave in the ocean.
Yes. So I because as I mentioned to you last night, there's something about trees for me at the moment. I'm not quite sure what it is. So I've it came to me. So I thought, well, okay, I'll use it as the analogy of a tree. And again, with analogies, you know, you can't go too far, but imagine the trunk, which is the single part of it, is all that is consciousness. And all the branches leading off and all the twigs and everything and into the leaves and the flowers and the whatever else is growing on the tree, you know, fruits and stuff, they're all the individuated parts of consciousness having different experiences. But because it's all interconnected, the information is available, you know, going both ways. So we're all interconnected into the, if you like, the kind of unity consciousness of the trunk, and having experiences out there as leaves fluttering, and each leaf is individual. And the leaves in one part of the tree, you know, that's out there in the sun is having a particular experience, and the leaves on the other side that's, you know, in the shadow is having a different experience. And it's all being informed. So that's where we're the one with unity consciousness in the trunk and having separate experiences as all these other parts. So the leaves may be this physical, what we call physical reality, and the, you know, the thinner branches are, you know, the dream state, and further back it's, you know, these other states. So they're not like kind of layered, that they're just all different states that can be experienced. I'm still playing with that as an analogy. And again, you can't take it too far, because obviously leaves can't travel and move around and, you know, actually meet up. But, you know, so there are certain things. It's just a concept to just show the separated parts, but still being interconnected.
What I think is neat about it, though, is I'm sort of picturing leaves as us in lifetimes, right? And if you look at it on a tree's life, it'll go through many seasons of growing and shedding leaves. So therefore, that could be analogous to our lifetimes, is that we would be this leaf on this tree, and maybe each lifetime we appear on a different branch of the same tree, but it's a different branch, so we get a different vantage point and all of that. Now let's say there's a different tree across the forest, and we know that tree, and you're a leaf on that tree, and in your lifetimes you and I connected via the root system, and we could zoom perhaps, and we could see each other way over there. But then my cycle ends, your cycle ends, when we regrow, maybe we all choose to grow on the same tree. And this is what's interesting, is to then take the all that is and plant all that knows that it is and desires to be on the same tree. So therefore you have basically a tree of knowledge, let's say, to where all the leaves that are growing on it are there very deliberately and chose to sort of organically come together to either heal the tree or to experience the tree as one themselves through these continuous cycles as the tree loses its leaves and seasons and things like that. Like, you'd get this really interesting perspective if you look at it that way. So I love your tree analogy. I think that's brilliant. It's beautiful.
Thank you. The way I see it, though, that there is only the one tree. So, I mean, there wouldn't be.
Right.
Because that's where the, you know, the unities. So yes, I'm, you know, I have to say I'm aware of the limitations of these analogies, and kind of like, well, you just have to ignore the roots at the moment, because like I can't work out how they fit in, because the, you know, anyway, so if you ignore that, but I mean, as you say, the leaves are, you know, each of us is a leaf, you know, and we go through whatever the cycle is and drop off, but that's not who we are, because our real being is the trunk, is within the trunk of all that is, because that's who we really are.
That's interesting. You, like a creator, are creating from a centered point, but all your little leaves are just your creations out there that you're able to create from this, even though they're all different, and but they're all from you. That's beautiful. How absolutely awesome, Dawn. Well, tell you what, we'll wrap up this free part of the show and we'll get into our afterthought here, because I'm going to go deep with you on this. I want to know, you know, what this human experience is all about, what the damn purpose to being human is. And we're also going to talk about vestigial organs, because you mentioned that earlier. Everything you've got on you is supposed to be there. Well, I mean, I've heard of people getting their tonsils and wisdom teeth and all kinds of shit just ripped off of them that they don't need. And I've thought about vestigial organs for a long time, so I'm looking forward to getting into that with you. Now, before we cut here, and I just want to make sure to remind everybody that your Substack, beautifully written, highly recommend you guys check that out, as well as your Facebook, Instagram, and your book are going to be located down below. What Really Makes You Ill? Outstanding, guys. I mean, it's an honor to be able to sit here and to wax poetic with you with this and know that this is just the beginning for you, that you're just getting started here and that you have so much more to offer. It's just an incredibly beautiful thing to sit here with you. So thank you for your time to hang out with us in the audience. Now, before I let you run, for this part of it, do you mind just telling us what gets you out of bed every morning? What gets you up every day? There's a trial in this place, and why do you keep moving forward?
Curiosity, desire to learn, keep wanting to find out more. Sometimes it's, you know, some of those mornings where you kind of, oh, and they think, no, because of what I've gone through, I go, well, I've got through that, so, you know, let's just keep going. I want to know, it's like a really long story. I want, you know, I'm not nowhere near the end of it, and I want to keep finding out what else there is to do, what can be done, what's possible, what I can do, what I can create. The people I'm meeting are just, I'm just meeting such amazing people, yourself, of course, included. Life is just showing me how wonderful it is. So I was like, I want more of that. It's not just about taking, it's about giving. I'm looking at ways I can serve as well, to give back, to explore, to help, to facilitate people kind of getting themselves out of where they may feel stuck, whatever it is, to help them kind of get them best out of their lives, which I know is always reciprocal, because I'll be learning at the same time. So it's, you know, to know what I can do, how I can serve people.